Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's been written about, songs have been sung, people paint it and draw it, love it as well they should. It's our land, our wild lands, and the miraculous mystery and beauty of nature. In a moment, we meet someone who has spent years and years looking at it, and in so doing, capturing the magic as few can. Tom Mangelson, premier nature photographer, when we return, here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Welcome back indeed to the Wildside News. In just a moment, I'm going to talk with someone who gets it, Tom Mangelson, whose photographs of nature capture the spirit and wonder that are his trademark. But I want to now invite you to into this family of the Wildside News. In the weeks and months ahead, we're going to create the world's first global nature network where all of us who know that we must work together on the planet and change our course can come together and talk. This is the Voice of the Earth Radio Network, and I ask you to help bring this about. It's really quite simple. First, become a friend of the Wildside News. You can do that from the front page of our newly designed website. Just go there, click on that, and there's a little form to fill out, and you'll get on our mailing list and be part of the building this network. We're also enlisting partners of the Wildside News. If you're a business or an organization which shares the values that we keep talking about here, we can come together for our common good, and in that process build an enormous network of people who get it. And sponsors to help keep the Voice of the Earth Radio Network, the Wildside News, uniting us all for a better hope-filled tomorrow. You can join the network from the front page, so please do it soon. Tom Mangelson is joining us from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to talk with him. Tom, how are things going in Jackson Hole this morning?
It's a beautiful, cold morning here. It looks like fall. Feels like fall.
Sort of the crystal mist in the air, that type of thing? Or?
Yeah, heavy frost and fresh snow on the Tetons and ice on my back porch this morning.
Well, I'm in San Diego. I kind of miss those days once in a while. No, it's beautiful. That's God's country up there.
Great time of year to be here.
It is indeed. Well, a lot of you are very familiar with Tom's work. He's been his works have been seen literally all around the world. His most famous piece that everybody has seen. If you haven't, I don't know where you've been, but it's a huge brown, large bear. He's got his mouth wide open, and he's just about to catch the salmon. It's an extraordinary work, and boy, there's got to be some great stories about that. But let's start out with the beginning, Tom. You actually started out in a small town in America, and it's from those roots that this passion for the earth and for nature began.
Yeah, I grew up in Grand Island and Ogallala, Nebraska, when I was my first 20 years or so of my life, I guess, born in Grand Island, and grew up on the Platte River, and the Platte is probably the Platte, my father, probably most responsible for me going into nature photography. But my dad took me hunting and fishing, and we spent a lot of time on the river and watching and waiting for the ducks and geese to come in. And so that's my early experiences.
Well, I think that the process of sitting and waiting and watching, because that's what you do,
yeah.
And you spend hours, sometimes many afternoons and days, and watching. And so that's when this eye began to develop, I suppose.
Well, I think so. I didn't know any better. My dad literally took me out in a duck decoy boat when I was, a year old, and I didn't know any better, learn any better than just sit and wait. And we'd sit for maybe a whole week waiting for one flock of geese to come by or come into the decoys, and I just thought that was normal behavior, and I never quite grew out of it. So fortunately for me, I'm used to waiting and waiting for that one moment, and now it's just changed from looking down a barrel of a shotgun to looking through a lens. But I think guess.
It wasn't, of course, just the hunting. It also involved walking around and experiencing nature, and you know, in areas like you're talking about, growing up in small town America. That's a rich life.
Yeah, no, there was so many. We lived right on the South Platte River when it was Ogallala, and then the main Platte in Grand Island. But just behind the, in Ogallala, just behind the house were the sand hills, which are, you know, rich in coyotes and prairie chickens and jackrabbits and everything else. And then the river bottom had, you know, beavers and ducks and geese and a lot of Indian artifacts. We'd go arrowhead hunting and so just, you know, spending a lot of time in outdoors, which I couldn't quite get out of my system.
I understand that. So then you proceeded to go on to college, and why don't you talk a little bit about how that led into you're actually getting involved with photography.
Well, I didn't buy a camera or even take a picture until I was undergraduate school at a little school called Dillon College in Crete, Nebraska. It's a liberal arts school. And I didn't know what I was going to do. My dad had a dime store in Omaha, and it was called Harold W. Mangelson & Sons. And all four of his sons, including myself, were in the business until I went off to college, and even during summer schools I'd go back there. But I realized during college that I wanted to do something with wildlife biology. So I studied biology in undergraduate school and went to the University of Nebraska in zoology, and then went on to Colorado State to continue my master's program in wildlife biology. But in the meantime, after being there for a year or so, I was offered a job doing cinematography for a company in Boulder, Colorado, photographing and filming wildlife for animal behavior films. So that was actually my first real job, and I was still doing some stills, but sort of was diverted by cinematography for about 5 years. And then after I did that, I realized I still wanted to do something with still photography, so I started doing limited edition prints, and that was sort of never looked back.
I guess there was some encouragement by certain mentors along the way that helped you to realize that this might be something you'd want to do.
Well, yeah, especially there were two or three. There was probably the main person or two that Paul Jones got at the University of Nebraska, who's written, I think, about 45 books on different groups of birds, everything from waterfowl of the world to pheasants of the world, and grouse and quails of the world, and things. He was my graduate advisor at the University of Nebraska, and an avid photographer and artist, and he took me along on several of his trips as an assistant, a field assistant, and so that's sort of where I first got hooked on photography, and he gave me a few lessons on, you know, lenses to use and shutter speeds and kinds of film, and that was about my extent of my sort of formal training. And then I met an artist, Owen Grommy, who's a famous oil painter from Wisconsin. His son worked on the films that I was working on. He was a consultant on the films in Boulder, and his father was a famous painter who I met in Wisconsin and spent time with and watched him paint. And he encouraged me to do more photography, and he was one of the few people doing limited edition prints of his paintings at the time, and I was naive enough to think that maybe I could just do limited edition prints of my photography, which really wasn't, it was pretty crappy photography at the time, but I didn't know any better, fortunately. So, but I kept with it, and because of his encouragement and Paul's and a couple others, after doing a number of art fairs, I decided that wasn't a very easy way to make a living, and opened my first display in Denver Airport, which sort of a kiosk display with made out of barn wood and sort of a tacky display, basically. But
Tom, I was talking to a close friend of mine who's very much a nature man, and he was saying that when I mentioned you, he said, "Oh yeah, the guy who has his work in the airport."
Yeah, I think most of them. It seems like people know me from I first discovered you in the Denver airport.
Yes, that's.
And it was just this kiosk display with a little black and white brochure with an 800 number, and my brother was back in, David was back in Omaha framing in the garage, cutting 2x4s into 2x2s and staining them and dragging my dad. dad crazy who had his bedroom upstairs, and then we moved into a warehouse. But the airport is, but we had one in Denver. We still have one. Well, actually, we have a couple of galleries in Denver now, real galleries you walk into instead of just a kiosk. But
as a matter of fact, why don't you talk about your galleries briefly, and let's talk about, please let people know where they can find them and their name, and then let's talk about how you go about this and the joys you have from your photography and your work.
Well, the galleries is a website. It's www.mangelson.com, or Images of Nature, which are, there's 16 galleries. I won't go through them all. There's most of them are in the West, and La Jolla and Santa Barbara and some in Colorado, and one in Jackson here in the Denver airport. But the website can lead people to the galleries if they're nearby, if they want to, would like to go.
And that's M-A-N-G-E-L-S-E-N.
Right.
Mangelson. Yes, indeed. If you haven't been to a Tom Mangelson Images of Nature gallery, go. These are divine you've captured the divinity in form. You really have. It's terrific. So you're a lucky guy. You get to travel, and you have all over the world photographing. Where have you been so far in life?
Well, I'm very lucky, and I never thought I'd actually get out of Nebraska. I took my nephew, who is 24 years old, recently to Rwanda and Tanzania. I just returned about a week ago, and still sort of jet-lagged. But he, like myself, he had never been out of the country until we went about 6 weeks ago. But since then, I've been to a lot of places. People think I've been to probably more than I have been, but there's, I realize how big and also how small the Earth is in many ways. But I've been to India to photograph Bengal tigers, and spent a lot of time in Africa, in the Serengeti, and in Kenya, and Botswana, and Namibia, and certainly a lot of time in the north, and probably the Serengeti, the high Arctic, Alaska, and northern Canada. And the Serengeti are probably my favorite places, along with the Platte River, which is where I started, of course. But I've been fortunate to be in a lot of places.
How do you choose a location to shoot from?
Well, I think, I see a lot of, we all do, we watch television, or people say, well, yeah, I should go to such and such a place, you should go see the snow monkeys in Japan, and I'll see pictures of the snow monkeys went there last winter for the first time, and also to Antarctica, and of course, everybody knows about Africa, and I think a lot of people's dreams anyway, mine certainly was for years to go to Africa, and I think that's from things we see, and then oftentimes I'll go to a place, I want to photograph a polar bear, basically a polar bear for a book I was doing in about 1988, and after I saw my first polar bear, I was so hooked on polar bears, I went back for the next 15 years and spent 4 to 6 weeks every year photographing polar bears, and ended up being a book on polar bears called Polar Dance, which is a sort of a major photography book on polar bears. So I get carried away with things. I get carried away with cranes from my experiences in Nebraska, and I've worked on two or three different films on sandhill cranes and hooping cranes, and so I have these sort of periods in my life, I guess, where I get hooked on an animal, and I finally saw a mountain lion 3 or 4 years ago in 1999, and just National Elk Refuge here, which I didn't think I'd ever see a mountain lion, or if I did, I probably wouldn't ever get a good picture of it. And I spent 42 days watching this.
Well, that's actually become one of your major passions, and you actually have an organization dedicated to cougars.
Right. We started after this 42-day experience watching this female with her three kittens. I was basically there most of every day for 42 days, from before it got light until it got dark, and I realized how important and precious mountain lions are, and they were really unique predators like grizzly bears and wolves and big carnivores, but after watching this female, they back up a little bit. A lot of people would come into my galleries and they'd say, why don't you have pictures of mountain lions? Because everybody, most photographers have pictures of mountain lions. And I would say, well, I knew where they came from. They're mostly trained animals that live in these photography game farms that are very small. They live in very small cages about the size of a station wagon. And then they're hauled around the country
It's a huge point. I just want to make the point that anything that you see as a Tom Mangelson photograph is authentic. He's been there and done that. These are not staged.
Thank you. But there's a lot of wildlife photographs that aren't, and that's one of the big issues is that a lot of, especially the large predators, but now even things like possums and skunks are kept in cages and they're put into what looks like a natural setting, and then people take pictures of them and try to pawn them off as the real thing. But I would, you know, so I just thought, well, I tell these people, well, I just don't have pictures of mountain lions. I probably never will, and, you know, it's not only not worth my time to, you know, spend, you know, a couple of years trying to get a good picture, because you could go out in the morning and do it in one of these game farms, but it's just, so anyway, this mountain lion showed up and it sort of changed my life, and we started, a partner at the time, Tara Leslie, she said, well, we should do a book about it, then I'll write it, and she said, you should, we'll do some, put some pictures in it, and it's such a rare experience to see a mountain lion and spend that much time with it that we should do a book. So we did a book called Spirit of the Rockies, which she wrote, and then after that, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, about 2 months later, raised the quota on a number of mountain lions that could be shot in this area, and that upset us enough, and we tried to make sense of it, but there was no biology behind that decision, so that led us to forming the Cougar Fund.
Tom, how can people get a hold of the Cougar Fund and learn more about that?
It's cougarfund.org. So it's just www.cougarfund.org, and that will give them a lot of information about the Cougar Fund.
The time flies. Tom, I feel like we've walked the fields together. Let's continue the story again.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Tom, it's been a pleasure. You know, when we return, we're going to talk with the legendary Terry Tempest.